The thing about flying on a Pegasus during the daytime is that if you're not careful, you can cause serious traffic accident on the Long Island Expressway.
Welcome to Floor 600. This is a podcast for two friends, Natalie
and Quinn.
Read the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series by Rick Riordan. Right now we are reading The Titan's Curse.
Whoa!
Third book in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of traffic, we're recording late. Partly because I was stuck in traffic for 40 minutes. It was only a 10-mile stretch.
9.1 miles, and it took you 28 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That should have taken, like, 10 minutes.
I know, and I had to pee. I had to pee so bad. I debated pulling over and squatting.
Since all the guys in those semi-trucks would have seen that.
Yeah. There was one stretch that was just three semi-trucks just pulled over, exhausted from, like, the heat and just sitting still. They had to pull over and turn off the semi because they were overheating.
Yikes.
Because they were in traffic for so long!
So, yeah, it's Hawkpoint's fault.
And I didn't get a satisfaction of seeing why I was stopped. So, yeah.
Alright, so.
Traffic.
Yeah, traffic sucks. Don't do it. Even if you're not on a Pegasus.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how to recover from that, and I don't know how to transfer into this. Our plugs.
Oh, yeah, plugs.
Take it away.
Oh, I'm doing it? Okay. So send us if you have, like, questions that you want us to address, or something that you really, really, really want said about Percy Jackson, and you feel like it's unaddressed in the fandom, send that to us to 4600.podcast@gmail.com, or you could reach out to us on the social medias.
Yeah.
Which are @4_600 on Twitter and Instagram, and Tumblr, 4600 Podcast. But I gotta be honest, don't check the Tumblr that often.
Yeah, so it's not the best place to talk to us.
Yeah. Email works great.
Yep. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/floor600. We got, I think it's cool stuff. We thought about it for a long time. And we have, like, a group for our patrons to talk about all things Percy Jackson.
What? Yeah, and as always, rate, review, subscribe, and stuff. But now we have to actually start on talking about it, and we already talked about the traffic in the beginning.
Yeah.
But I want to address that it's similar to Harry Potter. Again.
The traffic?
Yeah, like in Harry Potter 2, when he's, like, in Chamber of Secrets, and they are flying what's the car called?
The blue flying Ford Angola or something like
that. Yeah, the Ford Angola, they're flying the car over London, and they're like, we gotta turn it off. We'll give the muggles a heart attack. And
even though they, muggles don't say nothing, do they?
What was that? What was that?
Muggles, they don't see nothing, do they?
I don't even know what it's supposed to be from. What part is it from?
Stan Shunpike.
Oh! Oh, I didn't realize that was so... Okay. It's a great Stan.
I'm not sure if you're laughing because of how awful it was, or if you think it's fun, good.
Take it how you want to take it.
I'll take it in a positive light.
Okay.
Because when they're on the night bus.
Are you trying to find a video of them doing it?
Yeah. And he's like, don't the muggles see us? And he's like, muggles, they don't see nothing, do they? Except he has a very exaggerated, like, non-posh at all English accent.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. It's a great Stan.
Shut up. Stop making fun of me.
No, but it's similar because in like the he's like, oh, if I like it's again flying over people. I'm like, oh,
all right, I'm tired of comparing Percy Jackson and Harry Potter all the time.
Okay,
let's move on.
Compare it to other things. Can you do it?
Chronicles of Narnia.
Back it up. Evidence.
Because everything in the Chronicles of Narnia is actually Christianity. And Percy Jackson is like a religion thing. And everything has to do with gods, except that it's Greek and it's not Christian.
Mm-hmm. Are you sticking with that?
There's a lion in it. And a bunch of children are expected to save the world.
Yes. Yes. Okay. There's a lion in it and children are expected to save the world. And they go on boats.
They do. In Prince Caspian.
Mm-hmm. And the Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yep.
And, ooh, there's a dragon. I think there's a dragon in one of them, right?
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
What does a dragon have to do with Percy Jackson?
In Percy Jackson, there's dragons.
Oh.
But, I mean, in Narnia, in Percy Jackson, I promise you, there's there will be dragons.
There's at least one mention of a dragon.
A dracon.
There's at least one mention of a dragon in this section.
I know. You want to get
two
to
boys
the sexual
and two girls?
Two boys, two girls. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure there's a dragon in Voyage of the Dawn Treader. At least in the
Could
movie.
Could be. I don't really remember, like, every detail.
I don't either. I haven't read those books in a while. Really long time. I don't know. I just, really like, couldn't little, but pay attention to these books. I was really good at paying attention to other audiobooks. I listened to, like, all the James Bonds.
You did.
Yeah, I like the James Bonds one.
All right, we're not going to start comparing James Bond to Percy Jackson now.
I don't see many comparisons. Anyway.
There's a quest and a villain and a hero. Maybe a lion at some point shows up in James Bond.
No, there's sharks, though. There's sharks.
There you go.
Yeah. They, like, get a lot of people get eaten by sharks in James Bond.
Oh, Jaws. Okay.
No, Jaws doesn't get eaten by sharks.
Well, no, that's not what I meant to say. Isn't that the guy?
Yeah, Jaws is a character, but he has nothing shark related.
No, but you sent me that picture of him on the Jaws poster, and now that's like in my head, apparently. All right,
that was like a 10-minute side tangent. We haven't even gotten to the start.
Most of that's probably going to get cut out later. So,
yeah,
so that brings us to our recap.
Yeah.
I still think we need a more fun name than recap.
Recap.
we started with yesterday reading, I learned how to grow zombies. I gave it 4 stars because it's funny.
Yeah, I gave it 4 stars too.
Nice.
Because like it reminded me of Zombie Farm. Remember when Farmville was a big thing? Then they had Zombie Farm and it was like you were farming zombies because there was a zombie fad. Yeah. I don't know. My mom was really big into Farmville. We also got big into Zombie Farm.
It's like somebody made a Stardew Valley, like a similar game to Stardew Valley. And it's
Stardew
like
Valley,
a,
no matter how much you try and convince me not, it's Farmville.
Okay, somebody made a game super similar to Stardew Valley. Or it may have been a mod for Stardew Valley where it was like you raise like skeletons and farm like all this crazy stuff. But
cool.
Yeah, I haven't actually played it. All I saw was some screenshots.
Whatever.
It has nothing to do with this podcast whatsoever. So, fun fact. I don't know if we're going to be able to record on Tuesdays at this point.
I know. We got to find new recording days. We need to actually start recording this podcast.
I don't know what my schedule's going to be like, so.
I know. Because Natalie got a new job today.
I did.
She went to the interview and got a job.
Yeah.
Same day. Day of hire.
Oh, that happened to me one other time.
It's never happened to me.
It's very nice. It took him approximately 5 hours and 21 minutes to call me.
Nice.
That's nothing.
Yeah. That's like, I'm
jealous. So We're so scatterbrained today.
Yeah, it's been all over the place.
All right.
So
let's talk about Percy Jackson, Quinn. How's
let's
that
do
sound?
It. Let's do it. We can do it. My mom actually listened to a little bit of the last episode, and she said that we were too giggly and we got too off topic, and I was like, Mom!
What
you have no idea!
About? She was You're like, I edited out so much of the off topicness.
I know.
What did you leave in? I didn't listen
like,
to
no.
it.
Wow.
I don't listen to this podcast.
Because we live it.
Yeah.
No, I left in, like, the bits about, at the beginning, when we were talking about, oh, we're really late to recording today. And she was like, you're talking about that a really long time. I was like, oh, so it just happened.
Yeah, but Tilk says that he likes hearing that kind of stuff.
I know, I like hearing that kind of stuff when I listen to podcasts.
As long
so that's
as it's not, like, 25 minutes worth of it.
Yeah, this is a bit excessive.
Like this, or
yeah, like yeah, today.
Have fun cutting all this stupid shit out of here.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, it's been heavily edited.
Oh God.
Okay. So he's flying. Percy is on Blackjack, and they're flying, and it's cold, and they're following the car from Camp Half-Blood.
It's a van. But yeah, Percy is flying Blackjack through the clouds to avoid causing a billion car pileup on the expressway. They keep losing the van. Percy's cold.
Mm-hmm.
First two paragraphs. and then it starts to get interesting, folks. So stay tuned.
Did you write that in your notes? Did you have to say folks in your notes?
Nope. They land on the Chrysler building, which is another fancy building in New York City.
I always think of Annie when they're like, make it shine at the top of the Chrysler building. At the beginning, is that the Hard Knock right line?
I was approximately 5 years old the first and last time I watched that movie. So I remember absolutely nothing about it.
Okay.
Except for one shot where she's dancing in her red dress and there's like two guys on either side of her. All right.
Whatever.
So.
Chrysler building.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Percy thinks that Argus is driving the Camp Half-Blood van, but it's actually Zoe.
Yeah. And he's all like, what? Zoe? Is she old enough to drive?
Yeah. So. I guess Zoe is considered old enough to chaperone them and drive the van. But, okay, the fun part about this chapter, or this part of this chapter, the real fun part comes later, so.
A lot of stuff happens in this chapter.
Yeah, it's super long.
But yeah, so when they're on the top of the Chrysler building, all of a sudden vines start wrapping around poor little Blackjack and freaks everybody out, and Mr. D shows up, and I love this, because he's just like, Percy, you're escaping, like, camp. Yeah. You're leaving without permission again. And this
like,
would probably be really annoying. This is the fourth year in a row that this has happened.
Third?
No.
This is the third book?
This is the third book. For some reason, I thought
technically,
the fourth for a second,
the first
and
time,
I was like, whoa.
First time Percy had permission. It was
first
his quest.
First time he did. Okay, so second time he's breaking the
rules. Yeah, because in the Sea of Monsters, they escape over the lake.
Yeah.
Or I guess, is it a lake? Whatever the heck it is.
Long Island Sound.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But is it, it's called a lake in camp when it's in Camp Half-Blood.
No, I think he was on the sound section of it.
Oh, okay. I swear to God, we're not stupid.
It's a long day.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's like, did you really think you could escape the notice of the immortal, all-powerful director of camp by flying away invisible on a black Pegasus?
Yes.
And Percy's like, well, sorry, not sorry. Yeah, he decides he wants to take another stab at death and ask Mr. D why he hates heroes so much. And then we get this long-winded tale about Mr. D.
And him meeting his godly wife. And I don't really understand why you don't like it, but go.
Because it's stupid.
Okay, well, I'm gonna tell you the stories, and oh my god.
Yes, and so we're not gonna get into it right now. But the point is that it's stupid, because it happened a billion years ago, and Mr. D is still I hate all heroes.
Yeah, he does hold a... He holds a grudge against heroes, all because of the action of one hero, Theseus, who was a total butthead.
But we're not getting into it right now. We're
not getting into
getting
it.
Getting into it in oh my god. So, Mr. D gives Percy some cryptic message about asking Zoe why heroes are a selfish, ungrateful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, well, go, because one of the heroes is going to die on this quest, at least two, and I hope you're one of them, so go have fun, bye, die.
Yeah.
And then Percy and Blackjack fly away.
Yeah. He was really angry about it. He was like, I don't really care.
Yeah. He's like, the only reason I stopped you is to prove that I could.
Like, you don't think I'm a very good god. You don't understand.
Yeah. So Percy and Blackjack keep flying south, and Percy keeps him flying for so long, he, like, almost kills Blackjack.
Yeah! I started counting the amount of times that Blackjack, like, mentions food. And yeah. I think it's, like, 5 times before they actually stop to get him food.
Yeah, and then Percy's all, like... Yeah, because they stop at a rest stop, and Percy overhears, like, the van squad talking about going to D.C. because apparently Grover tracked something. We don't know at this point what he tracked, but he tracked it with acorns, and it's leading them to D.C. But I love when Talia calls Zoe a scullion.
I know. I saw you look up the in the notes, you looked up the word, and yeah. I actually wrote the definition in my book.
It's just like... Did you just call me a scullion? What the heck is a scullion? And in case you're wondering, it is a kitchen hand who is assigned the most menial kitchen tasks.
When I first read it, I read it as scallion, and I was like, an onion? And I was like, oh, that's not the right spelling of that word.
But then they all get in a van, and they keep going, and Percy, like, oh, wait. And Blackjack.
So, sorry. But, like, so they again have an Percy overhears an argument between Zoe and Talia about who gets to drive, and Zoe's like, I've been driving since automobiles were invented.
And Percy thinks it's back in the prehistoric ages because of the Flintstones.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the traditional automobile of today, like, I don't know, fossil fuel burning automobile, whatever, it was... According to Wikipedia and other sources, hopefully, 1885 with Karl Benz, Germany. But there, you can trace, like 4-wheel moving things that transport people back to, like, Leonardo da Vinci. So, depends on what you want to call an automobile.
I mean, it did have carts pulling people.
Yes.
Like, way back.
I mean,
forever.
Like...
That were probably human-powered.
Yeah. I mean, like, Leonardo da Vinci had designs for, like, steam-powered or whatever. Or wind-powered.
Just because he was amazing.
Self-powered. Whatever.
He's a very creative person.
Yeah.
And so, Blackjack is still about to pass out from exhaustion.
Because he still hasn't been fed.
So, by the time they land in Washington, D.C., Percy feels bad about it, which he should, because you can't just ride a horse for a billion years and... You know.
Yeah.
They're not robots.
Nope.
So he tells Blackjack to go home.
He asks him 5 times to get food. 5 times.
So self-centered, Percy Jackson.
Come on. At least let him graze on some, like, grass around.
Yeah, take, like, a 5-second break. You know? You know you're going to be in Washington, D.C.
You know where they're heading.
So Percy notices a van. Nope. Wait, what?
He notices a white van following the van.
He notices a black sedan.
Oh.
So Percy Blackjack in DC, and Percy notices a black sedan following the white van.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he's like, huh, I saw that sedan several times on the way here. And so this guy gets out of it, and it turns out it's Dr. Thorne from Westover Hall.
Yeah.
So instead of following the van squad into the Air and Space Museum, Percy puts on Annabeth's hat and follows Dr. Thorne into the Museum of Natural History.
Yes.
Which is closed for a pirate event.
Yes. But I love that he follows it because, or it follows Dr. Thorne because he's just like, oh, if Dr. Thorne, if he had survived that fall of, if he had survived that fall from the cliff, then Annabeth must have too. My dreams had been right. She was alive from the beginning and held, or, alive and begin.
She's alive. We get it.
She's alive. Whatever.
Yeah, but like, why does he still doubt his dreams?
I don't know. I don't know, because so far in all of the evidence that we have in these books, always trust a dream. But I don't think you should trust a dream in these kind of worlds and stuff where people can just be like, hey, here's a dream.
Yeah.
Don't trust all dreams. Be selective, but you know.
Yeah, I guess you still have to question everything when you're a demigod. So Percy enters this huge room with a balcony, and there are a dozen mortal guards, a couple of Cynthian Dracani, yes, and Luke. Luke. He looks awful. He and does. Like 10 years older because being poor evil Luke. Sucks. No. We don't like Luke. Why are we poor Luking?
I don't know. It just sort of came out.
He's literally the bad guy.
He is.
By choice.
I know. He's a terrible, terrible person. He let his anger
consume him.
But Talia still likes him.
Talia's dumb. Talia's been a tree for 7 years. What does she know? We'll get to that later.
Strong opinion on Talia.
I like Talia. I don't know. We'll talk about that when we get to that, okay? Okay, so there's also a guy sitting in a big chair that looks like a throne.
But he can't see his face.
Because apparently if you don't have a throne, you ain't real. You ain't nothing. If you don't have a throne, you're just a peon.
Okay. That was some strong strong throne opinions.
Okay, who has a throne? Zeus, Poseidon, the rest of them?
The rest of
Hades. This guy... Kronos probably has one. You know who doesn't have one? Mr. D. Percy Jackson.
Mr. D does have one.
Well, I guess he does have one up there, but he doesn't have one in the place where he lives.
Do you need to have a throne in the place where you live?
I don't know. Does the general live in a throne?
So I think the general just wants a throne. He's a general. Does he live like a fascist thing.
Does he live in the Museum of Natural History and he just has thrones everywhere?
No, he brings his throne with
him. He brings it. Okay. The mortals carry his throne. He's like, not on the bottom floor. I want to sit on the balcony. I had the best view up there.
Imagine the poor guy on the stairway with his, like, solid stone.
Pivot!
Pivot. Oh, God.
All right.
We're, like, so not far into this chapter.
We're never gonna get this done. Oh, my God.
Not at all.
I'm so hungry already.
Jeez.
I'm always hungry, okay?
Okay, but they're going in, and it's an event, and there's the general, and it's scary.
Yeah.
And
so Dr. Thorne fills in the guy in the throne, and apparently Dr. Thorne does not have a throne, and Dr. Thorne is not Dr. Throne.
Okay.
But the general is mad because Dr. Thorne brought him a scrawny daughter of Athena instead of Percy or Talia. But we find out later he's really looking for Talia.
Well, no, he just says a child of the big three. And who was Dr. Thorne after?
Good point. So it could have been...
the D'Angelos!
Yeah. Or Percy or Talia.
But Percy or Talia weren't supposed to be there. So the initial plan was to go after the D'Angelos.
True. But I feel like the general wouldn't care. Like, oh, no. Once he found out, he'd be like, you had four of them.
Yes, but he just knew of the two, not the four.
Yeah.
So if he had known the full truth, he'd be much more disappointed than he is.
Yeah,
and when I say disappointed, quite angry is what I mean.
Yeah. But the general refuses to let Luke go after the Van Squad because he doesn't want to risk Luke.
Yeah.
And Dr. Thorne's all like, yeah, we can't risk you. Okay. I do not know what accent Dr. Thorne is supposed to have.
I think it's supposed to be French.
I think it's supposed to be French-Canadian.
Why do you think French-Canadian? That's because very specific. Because he says
it's like a weird French accent, and he says Jay's weird, and the way he describes it, I have no clue what he's talking about.
Maybe it's just because he just says certain letters in a French accent.
Maybe.
Because he's got a weird face. I don't know.
Maybe. What's a manticore face?
Again, I did the freaking studying of it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I meant to mention that the first time.
Doesn't he have
a human face?
I think they do.
Yeah, I thought we discussed faces. He has like a human face and like.
Yeah, they have human faces and a lion's body and a scorpion tail.
Yeah.
That so, like, shoots porcupine squills.
Yeah. Crazy. But anyway. So the fun part here in this chapter is the general has a mortal guard bury some teeth in this, like, circle of dirt. Where it's, I'm guessing it used to be, like, an exhibit, but now it's just a circle of dirt, I guess. And water them with the stuff that looks like blood and bring forth cute, cuddly kittens.
Oh, no!
He's like, what is this?
The kittens. And they're, like, they're, what, saber-toothed tigers? From the, yeah.
Yeah, they're so cute. But I love how he actually has the general say, cute, cuddly kittens. So funny. So, it turns out he meant, like, he wanted teeth from the Tyrannosaurus.
Yes.
But, this is my favorite line in this, like, section. Luke says, this is why I don't use mortals, Luke said. They are unreliable. They are weak-minded, easily bought, and violent, the general said. I love them.
Yes.
Like, dark Ooh. Dog.
Ooh. I sort of, but I do, like, I want to picture him, like, being like, ooh, they're dark and whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And I just, like, I love them! And then, like, picking up one of the guys next to him and just, like, squeezing them, like, hugging them to death. Like, I just love them!
That's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. So the general drops down from the balcony and breaks, like, the marble floor. And he, are you okay?
Yes. I'm, like, really sorry.
And he plants the new teeth, which he reveals are actually from a dragon called Sybaris.
Ooh.
And from these teeth grow 12 skeleton soldiers, and they are not, like, our friendly Confederate sailors. These are, like, scary. They're skeletons.
Yeah.
They got yellow eyes.
Skeleton warriors.
All kinds of horrifying stuff.
But they're not like the skeleton warriors that you would picture if you watch Jason and the Argonauts, the claymation.
Oh yeah,
amazingness.
No, these are like gray, transparent, these are like, scary.
Yeah,
creatures.
Yeah,
and they see straight through Percy's invisibility.
Yeah, which is
very, I just imagine very scary. Like all 12 of them are like facing the general, and then their eyes just go. Not even a head move, just the eyes.
Well, I don't think they did that because, like, or else I would think that the general would notice, you know?
That's true. I don't know. It says something about, he feels like they're looking at him. One of them looked straight at me, regarding me coldly, and I knew that no cap of invisibility would fool it.
I sort of feel like they grew facing where he was standing.
Yeah.
I don't know why I, like, put it in my like, smack myself in the head when I said that. But I feel like when they grew up, they were facing his direction. So maybe that just one guy went.
Yeah. So one of the snake ladies throws down this gray silk scarf. And Percy's like, that looks like Zoe's scarf. That is Zoe's scarf.
Yeah.
So the general's going to give the skeletons a scarf so they can track Zoe and destroy. But Percy Jackson saves the day, sort of. He runs and jumps and catches the scarf before the general can catch it. But one of the skeleton warriors rips a chunk out of his sleeve, thus making him the target instead of Zoe.
Yep.
Yay, nice purse. But he escapes, so yay.
So hooray.
Question mark?
He's off to try and find Zoe, Talia, and Bianca, and Grover.
And I forgot to mention also that the general said that he is sending a playmate over to the van squad to occupy them.
Okay.
So, important for chapter 10, I break a few rocket ships.
I gave 4 stars.
Same.
Because it's fun, interesting, and rocket ships.
Yeah, and it's like, how's this gonna happen?
Yeah. So, Percy is running away from the Natural History Museum, trying to get to the Air and Space Museum. And he gets to the Air and Space Museum, and he's like, whoa, look at all these rocket ships and airplanes.
And he literally runs into Talia.
Yeah.
Everybody draws their weapons on him.
Mm-hmm.
Fun stuff. And I love
how Zoe does not lower it when she finds out that who he is.
She says, you, how dare you show thy face here. So he feels, I don't know why I made that voice for Zoe. So he fills in the van squad on what happened at the Natural History Museum, and Zoe's like, you are a liar, and he's like, why would I lie about that?
Why would he lie about that?
That makes no sense. That's mm-hmm. not a thing you lie about.
No.
So pretty much as soon as he fills him in completely, the Nemean lion shows up.
What?
So picture your favorite lion.
Simba.
He's got beautiful locks of flowing red and golden hair. And he's, like, friendly looking.
And he's humming Hakuna Matata.
Imagine him the size of a pickup truck.
Hakuna Matata.
And with bulletproof fur and giant silver claws and trying to eat your face off. And we have the Nemean lion.
Oh, dear.
Not cute and cuddly anymore,
folks. Nope, turned a little bit more into Scar.
So they get into this fight with the lion, and they're, like, jumping off the balconies and, like, landing on the rocket ships, and they're knocking stuff down, and everything is all just general chaos and fighting. And Percy realizes that the only thing that's not protected by the armor on the lion is its mouth
mm-hmm.
and its eyeballs. So he's like, what can I use to throw at this lion? Because he throws Riptide in and does nothing.
Yeah.
And so he grabs a ton of space food from the souvenir shop.
Astronaut ice cream!
Yeah, and it's like all this astronaut food wrapped in cellophane and stuff. Yeah. He throws it into the lion's mouth until it chokes and it's like up on its back legs. And it's trying to get away from him. And then Zoe and Bianca shoot like a dozen arrows into its mouth and...
Yeah.
Kill it.
And then I don't like that they blame the astronaut ice cream on being disgusting on killing it.
I know, it's not even gross.
It's like, not. It dries your mouth out.
Yeah.
You gotta have something to wash it down.
But my mom...
I love it.
When we were on vacation in Orlando, we went to the Kennedy Space Center.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom bought ice cream sandwiches for my nephews, and I was eating one of them. And it was pretty good.
I love astronaut ice cream.
The vanilla tasted like marshmallows, yes. And the chocolate tasted like chocolate marshmallows.
Yeah. I like getting the Neapolitan and then getting chunks of the chocolate and strawberry together. And then I eat the vanilla on its own because vanilla is, like, good enough to be on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But then I like...
Strawberry is never my favorite, though.
I know, exactly. That's why I mix it with the chocolate.
I had a hard time explaining to my nephews how it was made.
I don't even know
how it's
made.
They make it and then they super freeze it to, I think it's, like, negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit or something.
Wow.
I looked it up. I don't remember. But, yeah, they were fascinated by it.
Yeah. When I was little, we used to always go to the Science and Industry Museum in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And they sell it there. And that was, like, the only thing that I was allowed to ever spend my money on.
Food, of course. Typical Albert family trait.
Only buy food. It's necessary to survive.
Yeah. But the fun thing about killing a monster is that you always get, like, some kind of spoil.
Yeah.
After you kill it. So, the lion's fur turns into a fur coat.
I like that they don't have to, like, I don't know, like, do any, like, cleaning.
Yeah. It just happens. It's natural. And Zoe's like, take it, Percy. And he's like, well, you killed the thing. And she's like, no, it was your astronaut ice cream that did it. So, he has this nice new floor-length brown duster coat.
Yeah.
Not exactly fashionable, but very warm.
Am I picturing it right as something like Breakfast Club? That guy?
Probably.
Fist up.
I imagine Bender
guy?
Yeah.
Floor length?
Like real chunky and warm and like...
Oh, okay.
Like super thick.
Yeah. Like a big like brown Carhartt type thing?
Yeah, but like fancy. Like something like a
farmer would wear?
No, like fancy. Like something like a woman would have had if they had a lot of money and could buy a full fur coat.
Oh, I completely forgot that it has to be fur coat.
Yeah.
I was picturing it as a fur-lined coat, so it was fur on the inside. But no, it wouldn't be fur on the outside, because the fur is the bulletproof part.
Right. No, something like this. This is what...
So you're picturing him wearing, like, a like Narnia this. Wardrobe coat?
Yeah.
But that's, like a woman's... This... Okay,
but yeah, they're, like, usually women. You don't see men wearing them, usually.
Yeah. But okay. I can deal with that. I can deal with that picture. That's sort of absurd. Like, watching, like, I'm, like, now picturing him running around in a full-length, like, woman's fur coat.
Yeah. That's immediately what I thought of when he said what it turned into. But, yeah. It's good for him because his coat's torn up and he's cold. Mm-hmm. Grover... confused the security guards by playing a Barry Manilow song, which is funny. But they can see the skeleton guard through the glass walls. And Percy's like, you guys need to run, they're after me. Yeah. And so he's like, no. She grudgingly, emphasis on grudgingly, tells him, I do not like it, but there is no changing fate. You are the fifth quest member, and we are not leaving anyone behind. So props to Zoe for loyalty.
Yeah. Because I think, like, this is official, she's been proven wrong, that, alright, I guess Percy would be a valuable asset to this quest. Fine, you can cut along.
I guess. So that brings us to chapter 11, Grover gets a Lamborghini.
Ooh, 3 stars.
Same.
Nice. Maybe it's just because I don't really care about cars.
Yeah. But the fact that Grover got one is fun.
Yeah. Hooray for Grover.
Yeah. Yeah, so, cool.
So, Percy, now officially part of the quest squad, fan squad, quest.
Quest fan squad.
The questers.
Which you could be if you join our Patreon.
Oh!
Yay, safety numbers! They drive the van out of the city, but they notice a black helicopter still following them.
Yeah, because they'd been ID'd in that van before.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they have this, like... Okay, what was happening in America at the time he was writing this?
What year did this come out?
2007.
2007, so that's a year before Obama, so that's end of Bush.
Oh.
Yeah.
He has a lot to say about human beings in these chapters that are, like, is not good. So Percy and Zoe have this conversation about how the mortals could work for the monsters.
Yeah.
And Zoe says, I do not know how much they see through the mist. I doubt it would matter to them if they knew the truth. Sometimes mortals can be more horrible than monsters. It's like, why is this, like, is it just a theme he felt he needed to explore, you know?
Probably. Because, like, I think in this book we do a lot of saying that... Because, like, I think we're leading up to a point where we're going to be seeing a lot of heroes are bad and do bad things.
Yeah.
But I think we're leading up, especially with the all of the cryptic things that Dionysus said, we're leading up to the whole idea that a lot of heroes, especially in the past, did a lot of bad things. Like, yeah, they slayed monsters, but they did a lot of bad things while doing it.
Yeah.
And then they're also... So... I think it's also important that Rick points out, yeah, heroes do bad things, and then he's also pointing out at the same time mortals do bad things. And at the same time,
also, yeah, they're heroes, but they're also mortal.
Yeah. And then also, every time we have an interaction with a god, we realize that gods do stupid things too. So
everybody does stupid things.
So I don't know. I feel like he's just sort of like, I think he's just treating everybody in an honest light, like showing that everyone does bad things.
Yeah. He's kind of like breaking down, like, not in a bad way where he's like pulling us out of his world, but it's like breaking down some of the glamour surrounding it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, this book is a lot more, like, intense.
Yes.
Than the other ones. The other ones were, like, totally, like, I mean, less so in Sea of Monsters, but you know what I mean? Like,
they're children's books, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this one is a lot less like that.
Well, I think that's because he's realizing that his audience that was 12 when Lightning Thief came out is now 15. Yeah. With Titan's Curse, things have to get a little more adult.
True. It's just interesting to me.
Right?
This 15? Commentary. The 14,
15.
Yeah.
14, 15. Talia's almost 15.
Yeah. Talia's almost 16.
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of Talia.
Speaking of Talia.
She prays to Zeus for a lightning bolt to strike down the helicopter, but it does not work.
Nope. So they're also, they keep looking out for things to look, or like, to get away from this helicopter that's following them. And Bianca's like, hey, the parking lot there, we should go there. And they're like, what? And they're like, no! Because they were going to miss the turn.
Well, they think they're going to be trapped, too.
Okay, yeah.
She says...
Yeah. Yeah, because they're going to be trapped by the thing. But,
there, that parking lot, we'll be trapped.
She's just like, yeah, I remember that the subway was here because I noticed it because it wasn't here when I lived here.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And they're like, when did the subway is older than 12 years.
Yeah, definitely.
So I looked up when the DC subway was began, whatever. And it was in 1976.
Oh.
That's pretty late.
Yeah, so she's
a lot later than I expected.
Yeah. Because apparently she went through DC last summer with Nico, and it wasn't there when she and Nico lived in DC.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, what? But they ride these trains twice, and they finally lose the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And they ride to the end of the line, and they find themselves in this, like, industrial area, and it's super cold and snowing and stuff. And all the trains are freight cars, and they look like they haven't moved in, like, a billion years, excuse me. And they find this homeless man with a trash can fire, and he's like, warm yourselves up! And he's like, you need a ride, Wes? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, look at that train over there. And it's like this beautiful, like, sparkly train that they just hadn't noticed before. And it's called the Sun West Line.
Yeah.
So they, Talia's like, thank you, I guess, and the guy's gone.
I like the idea that they were in this, like, creepy train yard, because I think it's really easy for a train yard to be creepy. Because they're saying, oh, it looks like these trains haven't moved in a really long time. I feel like a train that's only been sitting there for a few hours just long enough to get cool looks like it hasn't moved in hundreds of years. Like,
but you know what I picture in this part is when you're riding the train out of or into Chicago, mm-hmm. and like right outside Millennium Station.
Oh, when you see all of the yes,
yeah,
yeah,
that's what I'm picturing.
I passed that in the middle of winter when it was like freezing and they're like flame throwing the tracks.
Yeah.
Oh, it's intense.
Yeah. And it's cold. It's cold in Chicago all the freaking time.
My toes are cold.
But it's fun that because this train is a car carrying train, so the mm-hmm. kids hop into all these different luxury cars and they ride west on the train. And Talia hotwires the radio in Mercedes and so she can listen to the alt rock stations. Grover has a Lamborghini, Zoe and Bianca are in Alexis, and Percy's just kind of wandering around.
Hey, can I sit with you guys? Hey, can I sit with you guys?
Yeah. So, this is, like, becoming a trend. It's having, like, by the time of this section, mm-hmm. it'll have happened, like, 3 or 4 times, where Percy has these moments where he, like, has this revelation about Talia.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of strange, but I feel like he did it that way because Talia won't just say things to mm-hmm. Percy, you know? So it's like, well, how are we going to learn more about Talia if Percy's not, like...
knocking on the door.
Yeah, chiseling it out of her. So, I don't know. It's awkward because it happens a lot, but I don't know what else he could have done with it, you know?
Yeah, he's sort of like... I don't know. It's almost like he's picking at scabs because he just needs...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like almost like he can't... I feel like he can't fully trust someone without knowing their backstory because he does the same thing with Annabeth.
That's true.
Throughout I think all of them, because like she in the first one, she's really secretive about
Luke,
her backstory,
and, everything.
Yeah, everything. And her dad, and like he chisels it out of her, and mm-hmm. he does the same with Grover about Talia and the tree.
Yeah, and that's then, true.
Yeah, and Sea of Monsters, he does it with Tyson.
I just think like the way that he does it in this is like
yeah, more it's noticeable. A lot more.
Because like with a lot of the other things, it just like happens in mm-hmm. conversation, and like he gets it out of Annabeth about Luke, like when they reach the hut that she built with Luke, and like Grover just tells him about the tree and all that stuff.
Yeah,
because it's like appropriate. But with this, he's just like, I think this is the thing I just learned about you.
I think when he was trying to find out about Annabeth's dad in The Lightning Thief, it was more, hey, can you tell me about that ring? Hey,
mm-hmm.
what about this? Hey, why like, were you only seven? Wouldn't you get annoyed
if you're hanging out with someone and you're just constantly like, this is this character especially, trait about you?
Especially since it's like all of these things that are obviously like a touchy subjects.
Yeah.
And this guy keeps coming up to you like, hey, remember this, the worst day of your life? Can you tell me about it? No.
This is your childhood trauma. Go away, bruh.
It's like, oh, you have a different childhood drama? I want to hear about that yeah. one, too.
But again, you know, it's a story, so...
Yeah, we have to know about it. It would be yeah. really annoying in person, but it has to happen in this book, yeah. or else it would never end.
Can you imagine if we just never learned anything about anybody?
Oh, God, it would be like, oh, God, this is such a boring book.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a story, it would just be a series of actions. Percy tells Talia about the general wanting to separate her from the group so that the monster, like, the big monster, can battle her one-on-one.
Oh, we didn't even talk about what was revealed about Talia when we were talking about Talia. When we just did that whole conversation, we didn't talk
oh,
about
no,
what...
Oh, no, it's further down.
Oh, it is? Okay,
yeah, I just wrote the notes in weird order, sorry.
Okay, you're fine.
So, she tells him that the Mountain of Despair is in San Francisco, so...
Yeah.
That's that mystery solved. And he's like, well, what's the Mountain of Despair? And she tells him to ask stupid Zoe about what the mountain is, because she's the expert, apparently.
Yeah.
And this is the moment he has, and he realizes that the reason Talia doesn't like Zoe is because Zoe tried to recruit Talia.
Yeah.
But Talia didn't want to leave Luke. And he's like, that's why! You don't like Zoe!
I love it when he realizes stuff. He doesn't, like, do it a silent realization that, oh, I'll just... let this knowledge be mine, and I won't acknowledge to her that I figured it out.
Yeah.
He yells out, aha!
Yeah, it's like, and, like, I don't know if it's obvious just because I know, like, the story, but, like, isn't that obvious? Like, couldn't he have made oh, that yeah. assumption a while
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, he had a whole bunch of evidence.
He's so observant. Zoe told Talia that Luke would let her down. And Talia says, Luke has never let me down. And so many question marks. This is what I'm talking about, okay? And Percy's like, well, we're going to have to fight Luke. And she's like, I know. And he's like, we might have to kill Luke. And she's like, get out of my car.
I think it just hasn't, she hasn't seen Luke as he is yet. As he is now. She hasn't seen Luke since she became not a tree.
Yeah.
So when she sees Luke, when she like pictures him, she sees little, how old was he when he got, 12-year-old nice Luke.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
And she can't really picture him as this mastermind manipulator.
Do you think that she thinks that he's the one being manipulated, which kind of is, but not the point?
Yeah, probably. It's like when Ted Bundy was arrested for killing all those people, there were still so many people who were not convinced that he did it. Oh. There's still people who are convinced that he did not do it. And it's just, some people have, like, it's like when they were, I don't know. It takes a bit of convincing sometimes.
I guess. I mean, I get that, like, she still has that pristine image of him in her mind, but...
I don't know.
I don't know either. I think hopefully it things starts a lot of question marks in Percy Jackson's head, too.
Yeah.
He's like, you realize we're gonna have to kill him, right? And she's like, Do me a favor. Get out of my car.
Yeah. Well, they might not have to kill him. You know? Yeah. Like, I don't know. We'll it's see. Definitely a possibility, you yep. know? But
definitely.
I don't know. And considering I don't remember how he ends.
Badly. Talia, as Percy is exiting her car, Talia says, Annabeth wanted to join the Hunters too. Maybe you should think about why. But we kind of already knew that because of the pamphlet. But we don't know the why. And it's like, did she want to join the Hunter? But, like,
I think it depends on when. Because of Luke? I think, yeah, it depends on when did she get the pamphlets. Right. When did she debate it?
Yeah.
If she got it when she was 7.
But then why would it have been in her bag exactly. when she's 14?
If she got it when she was, like, recently, I think it would have been more of a decision. Yeah. Like, should I, shouldn't
Like, buy. Were they talking about it while they were at school, you know?
Yeah. I think we gotta know the timeline of when this recruitment began.
Yeah.
And when it, what was the most yeah. recent act of recruitment?
Yeah. When did Zoe last speak to Annabeth Chase? Percy gets into the Lamborghini that Grover is sleeping in the back seat, and he's afraid of going to sleep because he doesn't want to dream about anything, which I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the homeless guy shows up next to him, and I love, he says, dreams like a podcast, downloading truth in my ears.
I know.
They tell me cool stuff. That's like our new slogan.
I know.
Every It'll be Percy everywhere. Jackson podcast says it.
It will be everywhere.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, there's only one person who can make such a terrible haiku. You gotta be Apollo.
Yeah.
And Apollo's like, no, I'm undercover as Fred.
Creative name, man. Creative name.
Yeah. And Percy's like, well, can you help us? And Paul's like, dude, I already did. Where do you think this train came from?
Yeah.
It's literally called the Sun West Line. And Percy's like, oh. So Apollo says that because of Zeus's rules, he can't help them anymore. Because they're not allowed to help heroes on quests.
Yeah.
But he wants them to help his sister.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't see him because Apollo can't see Artemis because she's like shrouded in darkness.
Yeah.
But he says when they get to San Francisco to look for Nereus, the old man of the sea. And he's like, don't be afraid of dreams. I'm going to make you fall asleep and have a dream. So he does. And he goes away. And Percy dreams about this girl with a dark braid running from something. And Percy's like, in the dream, he's like the man that she's running with. And the thing chasing them is apparently called Ladon.
Mm-hmm.
Ladon is more fun to say. So she is like, no, you had to go to my father. And the guy's like, no, I can fight this guy. And she's like, please don't. And he's like, I'm gonna. And so she takes out a hairpin and gives it to him. And he's like, really? And so it turns into Riptide.
Oh.
Just in a different form. And she says it's named after the current that takes one by surprise, which is fun.
Because it's a Riptide.
Yep.
Yep.
I just liked the, like...
The description yeah. of a Riptide.
Yeah. And so the dream ends with the girl saying that it's too late because Ladon is there.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum. And then Grover wakes Percy up to tell him the train has stopped. And Percy is like, the girl in my dream was Zoe Nightshade. Dun, dun, dun. Chapter 12.
I go snowboarding with a pig.
3 stars.
5 stars.
What?
I don't know. I'm picturing a pig on a snow park. I'm enjoying the picture.
That's true. I don't know. When I first read it, I was like, eh. But
also,
when you picture it that way, it's funny.
They have little hooves. How can they fit in the snow park?
Okay, I could go up 1, probably.
Okay, so you're giving it
4.
4.
Yeah. They arrive in this little town. It's called Cloudcroft, New Mexico. It's a little valley town, it's right about mountains,
mm-hmm.
and it's cold and snowy. And I just had a thought.
Yes, thought.
Why didn't they keep one of the cars from the train? Is it impossible to get them off?
It probably would be very hard to get it off. How would you get that off? You would have to get the, like, a freight car mover, and then you have to get the car off the thing.
I guess you would have to drive it, like, 5 feet. I don't know how high a train is up, like, up close.
Probably. I think they're, like, probably 5 feet.
So no, somebody would have to drive the
4 feet, maybe?
The car off the train, off the train car. Yeah. The
it's
car.
Like a James Bond thing. Hey! Yeah,
there, you there you go.
It's like in Skyfall, they drive the bug off the thing.
Yeah. But this is very, very bad because they're still in New Mexico.
Yep, they still got a long way to go.
1,200 miles away from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the general's only keeping Annabeth alive until the winter solstice, which is 4 days from now, people.
Yeah.
So Zoe and Grover go to get the squad some coffee and pastries, and Talia, Bianca, and Percy. That's all I wrote. Didn't finish the sentence. Go to see how they can get out of here.
Yep.
And they find a sales clerk in a shop, and he tells them that they would have to take a taxi from Alamogordo, but they would have to... Or they would have to take a train from Alamogordo, but they would have to call a taxi, which would take at least an hour and cost several hundreds of dollars. So there's no real good way to get in and out of the village unless you have your own car.
Yep.
By the way, the population of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, in real life is like 675 people.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. It's tiny.
Yeah.
So Talia goes around the village to find a second opinion because she's like, ugh, we gotta get out of here. So she's leaving Bianca and Percy alone on the deck. And Bianca's like changed a lot since she became a hunter. She's much calmer and more confident because everything is like slowed down around her and she like think more clearly and stuff. But she admits that she became a hunter in part because she wanted to know what it would feel like to not be a big sister 24/7. I'm like,
not a good enough reason for me.
And she's like, well, I knew Nico would be okay because there would be people like you at Camp Half-Blood. And Percy's like flattered, but at the same time, he's like, I don't know how to feel about this. Because like, I don't know. She's 12.
So, like, she's had to live with a lot of responsibility for her entire life. And that's not fair on her.
Yeah.
But it's also not fair on Nico to leave him.
Because it's not his fault.
It's not his fault. It's, yes, it's not her fault. But it's not his fault either.
Yeah. But, like, she has to live her own life.
Mm-hmm.
It's but, like she just abandoned him on the side of the road, you
exactly.
know?
She figured it out. But
she's like, I've got a chance.
I don't know. I think she could have done it better, you know? Like, if she had been like, hey, I'll take a week to decide. And then she spends that week convincing Nico that this is a good plan.
Or, like, figuring out how to, like, keep in touch with Nico instead of just being like, all right, I've thought about this
figure
for 20
minutes. Figure out the logistics and then, like, convince Nico on that side and be like, hey, we're still going to be, like, brother-sister.
Yeah.
And then you can do it. But I think she came to her decision too quickly. Yeah. And it bothers me.
Like, I think that's part of why Percy was like, are you sure about this? Like,
But she's doing great now. Yeah. She's a hunter, and I'm very happy for her.
Me too.
She's living her best life, even though Nico is not.
There. He's too little anyway. Right now, but... Yeah, so it's... I don't know. It's weird. But Bianca and Nico have a really weird life story.
They do.
So they, like, lived in D.C., then...
Pre-1976, because that was when the subway was made. Metro, whatever.
Yeah. It's a metro in D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they lived in D.C. pre-1976.
Yes.
And how? She's 12, he's 10. So...
Yeah. And then, like, there's other questions about their timeline, too, that are raised. But, that's, like, one of the big ones. And then, but, so Percy's like, so tell me about your childhood. Another classic Percy trying to dig into people's backstories.
Well, he's also, like, super uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
Talking to girls one-on-one. Uh-huh. So, especially because she's all, like...
Especially, she's a hunter. So it's like, if you do it wrong and you piss one of them off, like...
She's gonna shoot an arrow in your head.
Yeah. But yeah, and she's just like, oh, well, I don't know, I can't really remember a lot of it. And
yeah, like, but they were like, people would come check on them, and then Somebody came, took them away from DC, and then brought them back, and then took them up to Maine, and then they still go into Westover.
Well, yeah, they took them away from DC, and then they spent, or they stayed in a hotel for a week, and then a few weeks, and then they went to Westover, and he was like, a few weeks?
The same spot.
Where was this hotel?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird. Mm-hmm. But he's just like, eh, they're half-bloods. Nothing's normal for them. So, right after Percy admits to Bianca that he was eavesdropping on her and Zoe and asks what they were talking about when they were on the pavilion at camp, Grover and Zoe come back with hot chocolate muffins, which sounds delicious, actually. Yeah. And they're standing on the deck talking about what to do next. And there's, like, this warm breeze, and they hear something that kind of sounds like a voice. And, like, all the animals come to life, like, the birds on Grover's cup and the rat, the plastic rat that Percy bought.
Randomly. They have a really big deal about buying this rat.
Yeah, it's like a rubber rat. And he's like, I guess I'll buy this. And all of a sudden, like, Grover collapses. So the squad are like, all right, let's get out of here. And they carry Grover out to the edge of the village where they find skeleton warriors waiting for them.
Oh, no!
Ah! And so they're fighting them, and Percy cuts one in half, but it immediately reassembles itself.
Yeah.
And the only thing that hurts them is when Bianca stabs one of them, like, where the heart would be, yeah. I guess, in the chest.
So why does Bianca able to get them, but not anyone else?
That is just because of where she stabbed him.
Oh. Well, maybe that's true, too.
Maybe. But it's really helpful because Percy's lion fur coat is also bulletproof.
Yeah.
Helpful. So while they're fighting the skeletons, so Grover proclaims, so the Aeromanthian boar runs out of the woods and, like, swipes the skeletons against the side of the mountain. And Grover's like, it's a blessing from the wild. And they're all like, what?
We're like, how is this a blessing? This is another thing we have to deal with.
So there's, like, this 30-foot-high boar with, like, massive tusks, and he's just screaming, Ree! And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
So Zoe's like, everybody run in different directions. So Percy and Talia run up the hill and down some train tracks, and they run to a train tunnel, and the boar is just like, I got this, and smashes through it. And then they find themselves on a bridge on the other side of the tunnel, and Talia's, like, freaking out. She's like, I can't go over the bridge, blah. And so Percy's like, well, and he just tackles her off the side of the bridge onto the side of the snow-covered mountain, and they ride Aegis down the mountain like a snowboard. And how, while they're falling, I'm assuming Percy has his arm, at least one arm, around Talia.
Yeah.
They're falling.
Mm-hmm.
How did they get the snowboard under them, or Aegis under them, and, like, land on their feet?
Are they
on their butts? It's more like a sled.
I am picturing in Captain America Winter Soldier when Bucky, as Winter Soldier, smashes into the car with Steve, Natasha, and Sam. Steve somehow gets out of the car and they all, like, everybody's in his arms and he lands on the shield and they go off.
So, like,
he, like, bear hugs everybody and goes, whoa, and it lands on the shield and is able to safely get out of the car. By surfing on the shield. Like, bouncing sideways on the shield.
Oh.
So that's what I'm picturing. Sort of a sideways, ha, ha!
More of, like, a sled, less of a snowboard.
Yeah. Picturing more sled than snowboard. Maybe they landed like that and then they stood up from there. That would be hard.
Yeah, I don't know. Straight silly. That's the only point. But the boar runs onto the bridge and just crashes straight through it and into, like, a massive snowdrift. It's stuck in the snow. And Percy has another moment, and he's like, you're afraid of heights.
Thank you, Percy, for saying the obvious.
But he's like, she's like, don't say anything. And he's like, no, it's just funny because you're the daughter of the Lord of the Sky. And she's like, haha, very funny. Perseus Jackson. So Grover, Zoe, and Bianca catch up with them, and Grover once again is like, a blessing from the wild. And Percy and Talia are like, how is this a blessing? And Grover's like, this is gonna be our ride west, duh. Like, how did you not know about this?
Can't you pay attention?
So he says, Grover says, But it's gone now. And Percy's like, well, what's gone? And so he's like, I never thought I would feel that presence again. And Percy's like, what presence? And so he's like, ugh, the presence of the Lord of the Wild, of Pan, of course. Duh.
I love this. This is the first time we've got evidence that that Grover's, like, lifelong search of Pan might not be in vain.
Right?
Because I feel like Percy hasn't fully believed that Grover's search has been worthwhile this entire time. Like, he's never really, like,
cared. I don't know if he doesn't think it's worthwhile. I think he just doesn't think anything's gonna come of it. Is that the same thing?
Probably.
I mean, like, sometimes you can search and...
Yeah, he thinks it's, like, a futile search.
Yeah.
Like, a search that'll never amount to anything.
Right.
And this is the first time that they've really... Like, at least he has seen evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, this was the first time anybody's, like, seen or heard anything from Pan in, like...
Yeah.
Billion years.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's billion years today, apparently.
Yeah, billion.
So, I don't know, it's exciting.
Whew! That's a lot of stuff. So, are you ready for...
Bring on the monsters. Yeah.
Yep, bring on the monsters. Okay, so, the first monster that we see is the Spartoi, or the Skeleton Warriors. So, these little guys, you might recognize from such films as Spy Kids 2, and Jason and the Argonauts. And Voyage of Sinbad.
All I can ever remember about Spy Kids is the creepy thumb guys.
Ooh, the thumb guys? I love the thumb guys. They're so weird. No, Spy Kids too, when they go on the island and then there's like a whole bunch of animals that the Steve Buscemi crazily made. And then there's like Steve Buscemi has such a great line about like, ooh, do you think God's afraid? Or the reason we never see God is because he's afraid of his creation. Oh, it's a great line. But I messed it up, but it's a good line. But in Spy Kids 2, there's a scene where they go through a secret chamber thing. And the boy, or someone picks up, like, a piece of jewelry from this creepy, like, ooh, look at the Cave of Wonders. And he picked up a piece of the Cave of Wonders. And then the Cave of Wonders guardians come out, and it's the Spartoi. And they're all like, wah, wah, wah. And it's, like, really bad, like, early 2000s CGI. Oh, whatever. But... So the Spartoids are a tribe of earthborn skeleton men who pop out of the ground like daisies, fully grown, armed, and ready for battle. So the first Spartoi were grown by the hero Cadmus from the teeth of the Drakon of the Isthmian Spring of Thebes. And that Drakon was, I don't know, I saw it as Drakon, and I don't like saying Drakon, but okay, whatever. Drakon was sacred to Ares, and so when the teeth were planted, and then, like, whatever had, like, a special liquid poured on it, skeleton warriors would arise. So when Cadmus first grew his little warriors, they sprouted, and Cadmus threw a rock amongst them, and immediately he was horrified because he was like, oh, this will be a great army to help me build my city. And he threw a rock among them on accident, and they all just started fighting each other.
Over a rock?
Yeah, like, one got hit in the head and turned to the other and was like, hey, hit me on the head! And it ended up with, like, everybody was fighting. And only five survived.
Okay.
And these five were, like, the founding fathers of a lot of the little city-states of...
The five monsters?
Yeah, the five survivors of these Spartoi warriors.
Huh.
The five survivors became the, like, helped Cadmus found Thebes and the surrounding city-states, including Sparta, which is where Sparta.
Gotcha.
But also, another crop of Spartoi were grown by Jason in Colchis. And this was one of the tasks set to Jason by King Aetes during his quest for the Golden Fleece.
Aetes.
Aetes. It's a fun name. So Jason was told by Medea, who was Aetes' daughter, who was madly in love with Jason, unfortunately. Of course. So when Aetes set a challenge to Jason, Medea would come up right behind him and be like, "Hey, here's how you solve it." Medea was like, "Hey, when my dad's gonna have you grow these Spartoid warriors, how to deal with them? Throw a rock in there, see what happens." And Jason was like, "That sounds like a crazy idea," because he didn't study his history. And so he was like sowing the seeds of the dragon teeth, and the Spartoid starts growing, and he looked to Medea, and Medea was like, "The rock! Use the rock!" And he was like, "I guess, okay." And he took a rock and he threw it in there. And all the Spartoid began fighting against each other themselves. And he was like, "Whoa, that worked really well." But this time, instead of five survivors, there was only one survivor. And Jason walked right up to him and went, "Hua!" And it was dealt with. And he's,
yes. No survivors.
No survivors.
Gotcha.
So, the next monster that we face is the Nemean Lion. But to talk about the Nemean Lion, I would have to talk about the Erymanthian Boar. But to talk about both of those, I have to talk about Hercules. So, instead of talking about both of those right now, we're talking about Hercules. So.
Hercules or Heracles?
Heracles. Yes. I have decided because I don't know. Every time I read something, it's always spelled Heracles. But if you hear people say it, they always are like Hercules. But Heracles. Because originally in Greek it was Heracles, and then the Romans turned it to Hercules.
Oh.
Because Heracles after Hera. Because his parents were like, "Hey, this is a child of Zeus. Hera's gonna hate him. We should name him after Hera. So maybe she won't hate him as much." It didn't help. But they tried. But, okay, so Heracles, no matter what Disney tries to tell you, was not a total lovable goofball. He was not. He was a goofball. And he was a dummy. Mm-mm. He wasn't all that lovable. So he was big, honest, to a fault, and a dummy, and he did a lot of bad and weird things.
Nice.
So, but he was also, like, cursed by Hera. Hera hated him. And he was manipulated by nearly everybody in his life. It was sort of unfortunate for him. And anyway, Hera didn't like him and did a whole bunch of terrible things to him. One of the worst things what she did to him was when one day after he had been heroing for quite a few years and he had gotten married and had a few kids and he was doing sort of like the daily hero grind, like going out at 9 a.m., beating up some monsters, coming home at 5 p.m., like, to the wife and kids. Well, one day, after he vanquished the monster of the day, he came home, and instead of seeing his wife and kids, he was greeted by a huge monster and two smaller monsters, and he was, like, immediately like, "Okay, brought some work home with me, and he defeats the monsters. Well, as soon as he defeats the monsters, the vision is lifted, and he's realized that he killed his family.
Aww.
Yeah. Sadness. And he's very upset about this, as one should be.
Yeah.
And he goes to an oracle, and he's just like, "Hey, how can I, like, sort of repent? Like, how can I be forgiven for this terrible action?" And she's like, "Okay, well," Hera once again took possession of this oracle and was like, "You should go to your cousin, King
Eurythmus.
Yep. So you, like, an oracle told Perseus, go to the king Eurythmus, who was Hercules' cousin and did not like Heracles, whatever. And the oracle told Heracles that you had to serve King Eurythmus, sort of like as a slave for 12 years. Mm. And Heracles being like, "Yeah, okay, that sounds like a good plan, I guess." he just, like, walked over to King Eurystheus, and he was like, hey, so I killed my wife and kids, and I was told to come to you and ask for your forgiveness, and I would serve you for 10 or 12 years. And King Eurystheus is like, cool, I hate you, I'm probably gonna kill you. So he was set Heracles to, like, he didn't like him. Had a grudge from the beginning. And so it's like, all right, I'm gonna set you, like, 12, tasks that you cannot complete. So that brings us to the first labor, which was the Nemean lion. And so the first time, like, King Eurystheus is like, go to the Nemean lion. I bet you can't face this. And Herc is like, faced a few lions before, but okay. And he sort of goes over there and he goes to Nemea and he was like, hey. But it's like, the Nemean lion is this, like, terrible lion. It's no weapon can harm it, and then it's eating all these people. And so he goes to wherever, and he's just like, hey, tracking, I'm a hunter. And he finally tracks the lion down back to its cave, and he's like, he's thinking to himself, like, okay, no weapon can harm it, so, but I don't use weapons anyway, because Heracles is very strong. So he's just like, I don't need no weapon. So he goes up to it, and he basically wrestles it and strangles it to death. And then he's just like, but I like this coat. I'm going to keep this coat. So, because, like, he was just told to kill the Nemean lion. He wasn't told to bring it back or anything. And he was just like, well, might as well. And so but because no weapon could pierce the skin still, so he had to basically, like, rip, like, the head off.
Ew.
I read a very detailed description of tanning, and it was disgusting.
Yeah.
but, yeah. And he succeeded, and it was sort of like, he came back and he was like, you thought that was a task? Ha! So then, there's another task, and then the third task was the Erymanthian boar, which we also see in this chapter.
Yep.
So, or wait, no, that was the fourth task, fourth labor. So the fourth labor was the Erymanthian boar. And the Erymanthian boar was using its tusks to kill people and animals all across the mountainsides of Mount Erymanthios.
Erymanthos.
And Heracles chased the boar all over the mountain, and finally shot, like, he was using, like, he was, like, yelling and then beating his club on the ground and, like, to drive the boar in a specific direction, and he drove it into a giant snowbank. And then once he got it trapped in a snowbank, he trapped it in a net and then brought it back to the king. And then I guess Greek art likes to focus on this task a lot, because I guess it was really funny because he sort of just dropped this big boar in front of the king and then let it go. And he was just like, you asked for it. And like the Greek painters like to like depict, the king going, ah! And Hercules going, here! And the boar going, wah!
No, the boar goes, reet!
Oh. Reet! yeah.
Nice.
Ready for, oh my god!
Oh my god!
Okay. So, today we're going to be talking about Dionysus and Ariadne. Ariadne. And so there's like two stories to this story, but I'm gonna talk about both of them. But okay, so the basic story is that no matter what, this always begins basically the same. So Ariadne was the daughter of King Minos of Crete and Pasiphae. And if you remember from basically I think from our first episode when we talked about the Minotaur, Pasiphae was the mother of the Minotaur. And Minos didn't like the Minotaur, and he threw him in the labyrinth that he made, and then he would feed 14 poor Athenians, who were not his people, but a neighboring city-state.
Hmm.
He would put 14 Athenians into the labyrinth and feed the poor little Minotaur stuck in the labyrinth at once.
Right. Year.
Well, one year, Theseus, who was from Athens, and he didn't really like that 14 of his people were getting killed every year to this guy, And he didn't really understand why, so he was just like, I'm a young hero. I can deal with this. He was a little cocky. And so he went over to, he said, I will be one of the 14, and I'll go over there and defeat the Mind Storm from the inside. And when he showed up in Crete, King Midas was like, I don't care, go ahead and try. My weird stepson will take care of you. And, well, Ariadne was King Midas' daughter and was a little, not impressed with the barbaric ways of her father and, like, sacrificing random people into the labyrinth. So she, like, immediately falls in love with Theseus. Probably just because, like, oh, this is the first guy who said no to her dad. Ever. Okay.
Finally, a brave man.
Yeah, so she's like, okay, I love you. I'm gonna help you out. So she goes to Daedalus, whatever. The guy who made the labyrinth. And she's just like, hey, how can I help this newfound boyfriend get through the labyrinth? And he's just like, here's this string. It will help you find your way in the labyrinth. And so she gives it to him. And she is the reason he is able to succeed on his quest. Well, and it, in return of this amazing gift to make him succeed on his quest, he promised to take her home with him. And, like, marry him and live happily ever after. And I guess maybe he was honest when he said it, but... So, after Theseus successfully kills the Minotaur, Theseus rejoined the surviving Athenians, Ariadne, and... Oh, who's this? New person? Oh, Phaedra? Phaedra, Ariadne's sister. And, stories start to contradict around here, but, so I'm gonna start, keep with this one. So, in some myths, from this, the more, Theseus-loving Athenian side of Greece, Theseus and all of the men and all of the survivors start on their way back home to Athens. And on the way home, they have to stop at this island. And they stop at this island, and they are like, oh, we'll go home. And they, or, well, we'll stop at the island and resupply and have a rest and sort of honeymoon period. Because always, no matter what the myth is, Ariadne and Theseus always do the dirty at least 3 times at this island. They're very specific.
Third time's a charm.
But that night, after this wonderful night of experiencing Ariadne, Theseus would always he had a dream of in this dream Dionysus visits him and he says, hey, I fell in love with Ariadne, you need to get out or I'm gonna kill you and all your people. And Theseus is gone the next morning. Or there's a different story where basically Theseus and Ariadne stop on the island, do the nasty. Theseus sees Pasiphae waiting on the, Phaedra waiting on the boat. And he's just like, ooh, another one? Okay. And he's just like, I've already had her. And he just leaves her on the island and goes off and marries Pasiphae. Phaedra. Yeah. So.
Yikes.
Yeah. And I'm sort of more want to believe that story.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more Theseus stories where he does stuff like that. Like, did you know he kidnapped Helen of Troy before she was of Troy when she was at least maybe 12 at most? Or whatever, at most 12. Because, and he kidnapped her for the purpose, ooh, I'll marry her one day when she's old enough. Yeah.
So she's just his captive.
Mm-hmm.
For 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then he marries her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Theseus is he's not a good guy. And I agree with Dionysus on saying Theseus is not a good guy.
Yeah. Doesn't mean he has to hate Percy Jackson for it.
Not, yeah, that's true. But yeah, so either way, the story ends with Theseus sailing away and Ariadne alone on the island. But she wasn't alone for long because the young god Dionysus found her and fell in love with her, and they had many, many babies. And then when she died of a mortal life, he went down to the underworld and brought her back up to Olympus, and they are now immortal, like, husband, wife, happiness.
And he wants to get back to her.
Yeah.
And not be at Camp Half-Blood.
Mm-hmm. He also did the same for his mom.
Aww.
Or not his mom. I don't know. Never mind.
Okay. That brings us to Quest Queries.
Quest Queries!
My first nonsensical question. Does Blackjack's voice sound louder in Percy's head when he yells?
I think so.
It's just funny because it's like, it's in his head, so it's like, instead of having like a normal tone inside his head, it's like, oh my god! No, it's just funny. That made me laugh. When Blackjack talks to Percy, does he also neigh?
Ooh.
Like, does he speak in Percy's head and out loud at the same time?
That's a good question.
Because horses, like, neigh and stuff when they're scared.
Mm-hmm. But they don't neigh often. They make other sounds. Like, they do the...
Yeah.
That was my great horse sound.
They, like, grumble and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Snicker.
Mm-hmm.
Whinny.
Why do horse sounds have such stupid names?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know. I must have been in an irritated mood when I made these.
And I asked, what kind of astronaut ice cream is the best astronaut ice cream?
I like the chocolate.
Yeah.
But the vanilla is good, too.
Yeah. I think can't go wrong with a good Neapolitan because you get a little bit of everything.
The vanilla with the chocolate wafer.
Yeah. Ooh, or there's, cookies and cream one that's pretty good.
Ooh.
I think I had one that was mint chip once, and it was real good. The mint chip was good.
I love mint chip.
But the thing is, they were also talking about in the story about other astronaut foods. I've never had
other. Yeah, like a spaghetti or something.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound as good.
Cold spaghetti's good, but it's so dry.
I know.
Like, does all the food get that dry and crumbly?
I don't know, because I've never tried the other non-ice cream food.
I always want to.
I know.
I want to go back to Orlando and get some.
You can go to Chicago.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Or you could probably order some on Amazon.
Probably.
Or somewhere online.
I still would like to go back to Orlando. Heartless. Yeah, remember in that quest query we had in the Lightning Thief section?
When
he's on the train with Annabeth and Grover and they see the lions and stuff running.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about, like, what other kind of animals they see that are actually, like, mythological.
Oh, yeah.
I hope.
To see if they're all, like, are they actually the same animal from mythological times or... Yeah. Is it, like,
it's just a
like giraffe. In actual animals, like, they breed and stuff? Yeah, like,
because Percy says that he's seen the Nemean lion before,
mm-hmm.
bounding alongside the train.
Yeah. It's, like, I don't know. I always wonder, because it's, like, is it, like, satyrs seem to be constantly reproducing and dying, and centaurs mm-hmm. as well. They are mortal. And I would think that the Nemean lion would be the same. Or, like, monsters like that. And Cyclops, too. So, which animals breed and which animals form?
Yeah. I guess because the Nemean lion's technically a monster, yeah. I guess it would just be formed.
Yeah.
My next question is, why on earth and the sun. Does Apollo drop them in the middle of a valley with no way out?
Because. I think because
Write me a haiku about why Apollo drops
the No, I will not do haikus. Haikus set. Probably just because that's where the sun ran out. He can only run as long as the sun's in the sky. Oh, okay. Or the sun, or in that case, probably when the sun's not in the sky.
Yeah.
And then he has to go back on duty.
Okay, that makes more sense, because I was like, what?
Yeah.
I
get you.
Cool. All right, that's it for episode 16.
And next episode, we're reading more stuff.
13 through...
something.
16.
Maybe. 15 Always say maybe. Always say maybe.
Yeah. If you're reading along with us, read chapters 13 through 14.
For sure.
And then... did I say 14? I meant 16. Oh my God.
Yeah, and then as always, we always said in the beginning, but send us your stuff. If you have stuff to tell us, send it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Follow, rate, review, subscribe. See ya. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I feel like that was an abrupt goodbye. Bye.
Yeah, it was.